You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. To get this show every day, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can also tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Mets. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. If you want to try Built Bar today, go to builtbar.com. Use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order. All right, on today's show, in the first segment, I have to talk about my favorite Met, and that's Luis Guillorme and this incredible, somewhat ridiculous 22-pitch at-bat against one of the hardest-throwing pitchers in baseball, Jordan Hicks. So we're going to talk about that. I'm going to continue to gush over Guillorme and why I believe he deserves as much playing time as possible. Then in the second segment, I want to talk about the competition right now in camp for the job of being the fifth starter. So we'll talk about David Peterson and Jordan Yamamoto, amongst others. And then finally, in the third segment, I want to talk a little bit about Luis Rojas and what expectations should be for him going into this season, his second as the Mets manager. Before we get to any of that, though, I'm your host, Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, follow me on Twitter, @FinkelsteinRyan. You can also find some of my writing about the Mets at MetsMorizeOnline.com. So during the game on Sunday, Luis Guillorme steps into the box against Jordan Hicks of the Cardinals. And Hicks is one of the hardest throwing pitchers in baseball. A guy who can rear back throw 101 at times, has touched 102. The guy is electric. And he gets ahead on Guillorme 0-2 with a called strike and a swinging strike on a sinker and a slider. From that point on, you would think this is going to be a quick at bat. Here's this power pitcher. Here's this guy in Guillorme that people underrate and don't really understand how good of a hitter he really can be. And so they think, okay, we're just going to blow a third pitch by him and rack up another strikeout. Well, Guillorme had other plans in mind. He was not giving up on a spring at bat and proceeded to foul off 16 pitches. Let me say that again. 16 foul balls. And these aren't just like all little, you know, foul ticks, right, that just barely fall out of the catcher's mitt. I believe there was one that the catcher could have secured, but a lot of these were balls down each baseline that just didn't quite fall in fair for hits. But this is a guy in Guillorme who has elite bat-to-ball skills. And what I mean by that is he might not hit your moonshot home runs like a Pete Alonso or a Michael Conforto. He might not have that power, but he has a great ability to put his bat in the ball, to get himself into good enough counts, and to find holes. In some ways, Luis Guillorme is the type of hitter that we once thought Jeff McNeil was going to be, before he really started to continue to add that muscle and add that power to his game. For Guillorme, he's kind of a slap hitter, but I don't want to say that in a sense, because sometimes you hear slap hitter and you just think bad hitter. And that is not the case at all. This is a guy who year over year has improved. We've talked about it before. If you look at the stats since the All-Star break in 2019, he's been well above an average hitter since then. And this at-bat is the perfect example of Guillorme being a very solid hitter against a really good pitcher. And he was able to waste just a ton of pitches, stay in the at-bat, stay disciplined. When you get into that point where you're fouling off all these pitches, the idea that you would continue to notice some balls coming in and be able to take a few pitches and go from an 0-2 count and work the count full, that is really impressive. And the one stat I want to pull up from this at-bat is just looking at the pitches that he fouled off. So I just want to go pitch by pitch. Okay, the third pitch of the at-bat, right? 99.1 mile per hour sinker. Fouls it off. Then you have a slider at 87.7 miles per hour. So that is a huge dip off in velocity that he hangs with. So now after fouling a couple off, at this point, Hicks is like, you know what? I'm just going to rear back and fire. We got 100.2 miles per hour, 100.2 miles per hour, 99.6 miles per hour. Guillorme took the first of those pitches for a ball, fouled off the other two, stays in a 1-2 count, continues to waste pitches. Later in the bat, you got 100.4 miles per hour, 100.3 miles per hour. At one point, 101.3 miles per hour. At one point, 101.4. I mean, you get the idea. Jordan Hicks is just throwing absolute smoke at Guillorme. And what does he do? He stays in there the whole time. He's fouling pitches off. He eventually gets himself into that full count and finally takes a pitch and draws a walk. And the entire dugout got up for this at bat. The more that this at bat continued, you saw guys on the top steps of the dugout. Everyone was just really excited to watch this guy battle in a spring game that we all know doesn't mean anything. But he's not giving up at bats. He is clearly focused on earning playing time. This is not a guy who's content with his bench role. This is a guy that's coming into spring and he's showcasing his abilities every single time he steps on the field. Whether he's playing second base, third base, or shortstop, no matter where you put him, it always seems like I'm seeing a diving stop by Guillorme come across my timeline on social media, or I'm seeing him start a double play from third base, and it just looks really crisp. This is a player that I really believe in, and I believe that he is going to contribute to winning. Sometimes you have, and maybe this is more common in sports like basketball or football, but you have, you know, good stats, bad team guys, where they put up numbers, but they don't necessarily contribute to winning. And I wouldn't necessarily classify any player on the Mets in that category of just being a good stat, bad team, doesn't really contribute to winning type guys. But there is the opposite of that, where maybe the stats don't jump off the page, but they help you win ball games. And I'm telling you, if you've watched the game of baseball for some time, if you've played the game of baseball, when you see all of the accumulation of things that this guy does on the field, you just realize he's one of those guys that's going to help you win. Because I want him on that diamond as much as possible. Maybe he's not going to hit me the 3-run homer in the third inning that's going to give me a lead. But you know what? He might make a diving stop with the bases loaded, start a double play on a rocket that was hit to third, get you out of a jam, and it equates to the exact same thing on the scoreboard because he can save you 3 runs with his glove. And you know what? He's going to be a cog that will help move the lineup along and will be a contributing factor offensively too. I really believe that. So I'm looking at a player right now who just seems to get better every single day. And the more I watch him, the more I want to see him. So we'll see how Guillorme's playing time evolves over the year. Right now, it does seem like he is heading towards that bench utility role, but I don't see any reason why someone like Jonathan Villar should get playing time in the starting lineup over Luis Guillorme. At this point, it just does not make sense to me. This is a guy that can really impact the game in a lot of ways. Anyway, that's enough Guillorme talk for today. Maybe we'll see something else in the next game that will make me bring up my favorite player again. But for now, let's switch gears and talk about maybe the tightest battle in camp right now, which is the competition for the job of fifth starter. I will talk about that in just a minute. But BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Football's over, but we got the NBA, we got March Madness with college basketball, and the NHL in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. They have real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. So head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your welcome bonus on your first deposit with our promo code LOCKEDON. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. And as I just mentioned, March Madness, if you want to join our bracket challenge for March Madness, check out the link in the description below and you will find where we are holding that over at ESPN.com. So let's talk a bit about the Mets starting rotation. We've already talked at length about the top four. We know what that's going to be. The one question mark right now is Carlos Carrasco. Will he be ready for opening day? Over the weekend, he expressed no concerns about being part of the opening day rotation. He said he's going to be ready. He's playing catcher already. He's going to throw a bullpen on Tuesday and try to ramp up very quickly. And that is where Luis Rojas is expressing a little bit of hesitation. He is not as full bore gung-ho on saying, yes, he's going to be there the way Carrasco was. Carrasco was very confident in his ability to make that short window, but I think the Mets are going to be careful. So that could make this a different conversation because we could see Carrasco start the year on the injured list, have another pitcher take the first turn, maybe the first two turns in the rotation, and then he can be completely ready and then enter the rotation at some point, I guess, in mid-April. But if not, it seems to me, the more we've gone through spring, that this is really a two-man race for the fifth starter job, and that's David Peterson or Jordan Yamamoto. Joey Lucchesi, for whatever reason, has only pitched two innings. Now, he did not give up a run in those two innings, and we don't know all the work that's going on in the sides, in the bullpens, in the live BPs. They could be getting a much more extended look at Joey Lucchesi than I realized. But right now, when you're looking at guys getting stretched out, we're just seeing more of David Peterson and Jordan Yamamoto, and particularly the latter there, because Yamamoto is leading this group with 8 1/3 innings pitch. Peterson has 6 innings pitch, 4 of which came on Sunday, where he gave up 3 runs on 5 hits and 2 walks, but did throw 68 pitches, had 1 strikeout in his start. You look at the other options here. As I said, Lucchesi has the 2 innings. Corey Oswalt made his spring debut on Sunday, striking out 5 over 2 scoreless innings pitched. So he looked pretty impressive, but I just can't see the Mets having Oswalt make this team. I just think that, I mean, he's already been taken off the 40. I don't believe they're going to put him back on. I think he's just going to represent more depth to them in Syracuse. And then you have Mike Montgomery, who's the other name to talk about. And I really don't think that he is going to be competing for that fifth starter spot, because I think Montgomery has a better chance to be the long man slash swing man coming out of the Mets bullpen. I think that's a role he's competing for, not to mention the opt-out in his contract where he could sign elsewhere if he has an opportunity with another team to make a major league roster. That is still, of course, on the table. So all of that boils down again to Yamamoto or Peterson. And the one thing I want to note about this competition is David Peterson, while great last year, he had that 3.44 ERA over 49 2/3 innings pitched. That was 9 starts and that one game where he came in and piggybacked off Michael Wacha. So essentially 10 outings. If you look at Jordan Yamamoto's rookie season, through 7 starts, he had a 1.59 ERA, struck out 34 batters in 34 innings pitch. That is nearly an identical sample size to what Peterson just produced in 2020. Obviously, you're talking about 15 extra innings that Peterson pitched as compared to Yamamoto's first 7 starts. But my point is, we can't overreact to Peterson's small sample size and also look at Yamamoto's career and overreact to what he did in 2020, which was essentially 2 outings, if I'm not mistaken. I don't have that in front of me, but I believe it was 2 outings and 1 where he was just left out to dry against the Atlanta Braves and gave up a ton of runs when the Marlins were just completely crushed with COVID. But I look at these two pitchers, and I would say they're at similar stages of their careers, except Yamamoto has already been traded. you know, being traded from the Brewers to the Marlins, and then traded again after the Marlins basically gave up on him. So he might have that extra chip on his shoulder that's helping him right now get through spring training. And I don't know if that necessarily should tip the scale in any way, shape, or form the spring result. I still believe in David Peterson as a starting pitcher. But you look at these two guys, and to me, it's hard to say for sure which one's going to be more effective. As much as I loved what I saw out of Peterson, the league is going to adjust to him. And we saw with Jordan Yamamoto in his rookie year, once the league adjusted, that's where he started to struggle. He got, you know, lit up by the Dodgers, and that kind of spiraled his rookie season to the point where he eventually finished with a 4.46 ERA. And we just don't know for sure if David Peterson ended up going through a full season where he got 15 starts, maybe he got 20 starts, 25 starts, if those numbers would have held up. So I just think the Mets are at an interesting juncture of spring training where they're going to keep giving these guys opportunities. And I think David Peterson can afford to have some bad outings to close out his spring, because the Mets, with all of his options really intact, can simply say, look, David, we loved what you did last year. We believe in you. But Jordan Yamamoto pitched better in camp. We're going to give him the nod for now. Go to Syracuse and prove why you should be back here. That would not be out of the question. Let's remember that Peterson never got a chance to pitch in AAA because of how crazy 2020 was. So that is not impossible to see. I wouldn't be surprised if this thing was close, if they would just kind of be deferential to the homegrown guy and give Peterson the nod over Yamamoto. I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case, if we saw Yamamoto still make the team out of the bullpen, or if the Carrasco situation plays out where they start him on the IL. Maybe both these guys make your opening day rotation, and then they have a decision to make, you know, 10 days into the season when Carrasco comes back, whether to push, you know, which one to the bullpen or whether to send one of them down. But I think the Mets have a really good problem on their hands, and this is definitely the battle to watch as we enter the second half of spring training. Now, one of the people that will have to help make these decisions is Luis Rojas, the Mets manager. I want to talk about expectations for him heading into the 2021 season in just a minute. We have been telling you for some time about Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar on the market, because it comes low in calorie, low in sugar, high in protein, and high in fiber, while just tasting amazing, coming covered in 100% chocolate on all of their bars. And now is the time to find out which Built Bar is the best, because it is Built Bar Madness. That's right. In honor of March and March Madness, there is a full-on tournament going on right now to see which Built Bar tastes the best. And today's matchup is the Toffee Almond Bar versus the Mint Brownie Bar. Now, some of you may know I was partial to the Mint Brownie Bar before the Cookies and Cream Bar came into my life, but the Mint Brownie Bar is probably my second favorite, so I am definitely voting for a Mint Brownie in this matchup. But hey, if you're an almond type of person, maybe the Toffee Almond Bar is for you, and that's the one that you want to vote for. So go to BuiltBar.com or go to @Built_Bar on Twitter, and you can vote on your favorites. Remember, use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order. That is LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order at BuiltBar.com. And check back to see who won today's matchup and who will eventually become the best tasting protein bar. My money is still on Cookies and Cream, but hey, Mint Brownie would be a nice champion as well. Let's finish the show talking about Luis Rojas. He has had one of the most unique experiences of any manager to come in last offseason. He interviews for the job, doesn't get it. Then Carlos Beltran, who got the job, gets fired. Suddenly Rojas is back and in that position. Now he was going to be on Beltran's bench. He ends up getting promoted. He's the manager. He's the guy everyone's looking to. And guess what? Halfway through your first spring training, everything gets shut down. There's a global pandemic. You then deal with months of uncertainty. Are we playing? Are we not playing? If we are playing, how are we playing? What's the health protocols? What's the safety? What are we doing? How far away do I have to stand from my players? Are we wearing masks? What's the deal with hand sanitizing stations? And how do we drink water during the game? Just think about all of the ridiculous emails that this dude probably got last year. I mean, it was enough to break anyone. If you really think about all of the minutiae that came down to managing a team for the first time in a COVID season. So now you come into this year and he's in a little bit of a better situation because we are further removed from the start of the pandemic. The vaccines are out. There's going to be fans back. There's going to be energy in the ballpark again. We're starting to get to a little bit more normalcy. You're going to have a normal season with normal rules. No DH this time, but it's going to be back to the way National League Baseball has been for all these years. And it is just a lot simpler in that sense. But this is not an easy job for Luis Rojas. Because if I look right now, if the Mets season went sideways, who's the first person that's going to get blamed? Is it going to be Sandy Alderson? I don't think so. Going to be Steve Cohen. I'm not going to blame the owner, who everyone's in love with. That's not happening. Is it going to be the general manager? Is Scott going to get the blame? Come on. No, he's not. Are you going to blame the individual players? I mean, maybe. Maybe some of them will make mistakes that could lead to the Mets not being successful. But ultimately, the buck's going to stop with the manager. And Luis Rojas is a prime scapegoat candidate. Where if things don't work out and the Mets don't make the playoffs, and you have a new owner with a returned president who didn't get to hire this manager, even though Alderson initially hired Rojas and knows Rojas very well for all the time that they've both been in the Mets organization, that could still be the case where if the Mets don't meet expectations, he's the guy who is to blame. I don't think that'll happen mid-season unless things really spiral, but it's a lot of pressure for Luis Rojas. And it's also a situation where he's a modern-day manager. What I mean by that is the Mets are becoming a modern-day baseball club where they're going to rely more and more on analytics. And that is why being a major league manager is maybe the most thankless job in the sport, because you're blamed, you have to meet with the media after the games, but you don't even get to make all these decisions anymore. Because they're going to give you a binder. They're going to tell you what to do in each situation. And this was a guy whose job, when the Mets didn't have an analytics department, it was Rojas' job to be a bridge between the analytics guys and Mickey Callaway at the time as the manager and the Mets staff. That was his job as the quality control coach. Now, he's the manager that has to embrace all this information and implement it. And if he doesn't implement it correctly, he's to blame. If he implements it correctly, but the Mets lose, he still might be to blame. So what does Rojas have to do well at his job, to excel, to get this team going in the right direction? It's very clear it comes down to clubhouse camaraderie, getting everyone on the same page, keeping your bench guys motivated. You have to be a type of guy now where you put your arm around a guy and you explain to him, look, you're not playing against left-handed pitching because these are the numbers, and we're going based on the numbers. But be ready, because in a big spot against a righty late in the game, we're going to need you, or obviously vice versa on the other side. So these are things he's going to have to do. And the good part about Rojas is he has such great relationships throughout that clubhouse. He managed a lot of these guys through their development in the minor leagues. And so he has buy-in from his players. And as much as I've kind of been pessimistic on his opportunity this year, just talking about the downsides of being a scapegoat, he also has the benefit of now inheriting, you know, a Bugatti. You know, he's got the keys to a really nice car. He's got a ton of talent. He's got a loaded lineup. He's got more depth with his pitching and his bench than the Mets have had in years. He's got an owner that can go out, can spend whenever, if he keeps this job and ends up with the team next year, to continue to accent this roster. He has a team president, Sandy Alderson, who hasn't been afraid to shore up a team mid-season if a team has real title chances. All of that is working in Rojas's favor. So this is a really boom or bust opportunity for Luis Rojas to establish himself as one of those managers in baseball that can have a very long career. So if he can at least get this team to the playoffs, if he gets everyone to buy in, he could eventually see a contract extension. He could be the manager that stays with this core going forward. And I think this core of players would want nothing else than to have Rojas assume that position. But there's just a lot of factors that are going to go into this. And I think that Rojas certainly could be the man for the job, but there's just a lot he has to prove, and there's also a lot that's not in his control. So hopefully the Mets had that big season and Rojas gets to stick around. It's just definitely a storyline I wanted to address, because that's something we're going to be following all year, because you know as soon as the Mets hit a skid with this media market, with the fans, there's going to be questions, you know? It just happens. So definitely something that we are going to be watching throughout the 2021 season. Anyway, that'll be all for today's edition of Locked On Mets. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. Make sure you follow me on Twitter, @FicklesteinRyan. Follow the show at Locked On Mets. And we're counting down the days until opening day here on the Locked On Podcast Network. And next Wednesday, March 24th, the Locked On MLB podcast begins one of our biggest events of the year, and that's the Locked On MLB Division Preview Series. All of our local experts in every MLB market answer some of the biggest questions around our teams. There is no better way or easier way to get baseball smart before opening day. So subscribe today to Locked On MLB on the radio.com app or wherever you get your podcasts.